Welcome to the America Magazine podcast. America Magazine is the national Catholic weekly. Visit us online at www.americamagazine.org.
Hello and welcome to the America Magazine podcast, the week of February 28th. This week we were joined by Kathleen Cavaney from the University of Notre Dame. Professor Cavaney teaches in the law school as well as the Department of Theology, and she has an article in the current issue called Defining Feminism. I spoke to Professor Cavaney from her offices in South Bend.
Maybe we can just begin with mentioned in the introduction to your piece here that the Roman Catholic Church as a whole is a feminist church in many crucial ways. Maybe you can explain that.
Well, I think it's important at least, you know, to kind of go back and kind of capture what the core impetus of feminism is. And I think it has to be, you know, a steady commitment to the well-being and flourishing of women, you know, not just as subjects, not as just as instruments, but as moral agents, as members of communities, as members of families. And I think it's very hard to ignore all the good that the Catholic Church has done for, you know, women throughout the world, and it continues to do as part of its social service, you know, in terms of education, in terms of support in war-torn countries, in terms of, you know, advocating, you know, for their equal dignity. All of that, I think, is important to start with before we get to the controversies. And so that's what I meant by that.
Speaking of the controversies, obviously, as you mentioned, you know, contraception, abortion, these are two areas where secular feminists are very critical of the church. Is it broader than that? Are there other kind of fundamental differences between the two camps?
Yeah, well, I think this whole notion of, and this is what I was trying to sort through a little bit, I mean, many secular feminists and many Catholic feminists, too, are skeptical of the notion of complementarity, and that's a key aspect of what John Paul II, you know, in his new feminism that he was sort of calling for, that's articulated in his various documents, but it's probably most fully presented in his letter, apostolic letter, Mulieris Dignitatum, on the dignity and vocation of women, seeing men and women as complementary, seeing a feminine genius, and people, many feminists are skeptical of that because they see it as really constricting the role of women, not highlighting its specialness as much as constricting it, and highlighting its specialness and by putting it on a pedestal that kind of keeps it separate from the rest of the world. So that's one of the reasons I wanted to talk about kind of the tensions between complementarity and collaboration in the article.
Well, yeah, maybe you can flesh that out, specifically complementarity. I mean, that's a term that's used a lot, but maybe the average reader might not be familiar with.
Well, complementarity basically is a way of some, and there are different ways of describing it, of saying that men and women have distinct gifts, equal gifts, but complementary gifts, not the same gifts across the board. So what we need to do is to see how we can bring our different strengths to this, to the situation, and not try to replicate each other's set of strengths. Now, that's, I think, there's got to be some notion of complementarity within kind of a Christian, or a Catholic, rather, anthropology, because, you know, God created us male and female, and creation's good. So you have to take seriously that this difference is good and is, you know, is something that's worth, you know, preserving and nurturing. The problem comes when you start parceling out the traits. When you start saying, this is a male trait, this is a female trait, you know, men are active, women are passive, men are thinkers, women are feelers. And it's that parceling out that I think that, and the way that has worked out historically in the past, that brings up a lot of worries in many feminists.
Right, as you point out that, you know, even mothers taking care of their children have to draw upon a kind of a wealth of talents in order to protect their child, to raise their child, to feed their child. It's not just nurturing.
Right, and nurturing, I mean, that's why I think a broader understanding of what people do might actually it's not going to get rid of the tensions, but might, you know, shade them a little bit more subtly. Because, you know, Pope John Paul II is very concerned to protect the role of women as mothers and the value of motherhood, you know, as a vocation, as a commitment of women. Doesn't want that denigrated in comparison to other opportunities available. I think that's extremely important. We don't want that. But if you think about the actual circumstances under which women have to mother, that takes a range of talents, and being a mother to a small baby really is different from being a mother to, you know, a 13-year-old who comes home with, you know, pink and blue hair and piercings. There's a different kind of strength that's involved.
And you mentioned collaboration. I mean, how could perhaps that notion work differently?
Well, I mean, Pope Benedict wants to encourage collaboration between men and women. I mean, in this letter to all the bishops that he wrote when he was functioning as prefect of the Sacred Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, he called for collaboration. And he admitted, you know, embraced the fact that there are working women in the world, there are working mothers in the world, you know, but what he doesn't want is this kind of destructive competition between men and women, you know, that comes from, you know, trying to usurp each other's characteristics. I think destructive competition is always destructive just because of the fact that it's destructive. But I don't think that all, you know, kinds of, you know, working together, you know, pressing one another toward excellence in school and the workroom is necessarily destructive competition, because it can also be a form of friendship, of pursuing, you know, the good together. Complementarity, again, if taken too far in anything, you know, is really about splitting up jobs, not working together at them. You know, I take care of the home, you take care of the office. You do what I don't do. I do what you don't do. If that's the way it operates, then there's really no collaboration. There might be parallel working. So you need to talk about, you know, not only kind of an acknowledgement of differences, but also, you know, an acknowledgement of common interests and common talents and common concerns, if we're going to get the picture right.
Sure. You mentioned your piece, I mean, near the end, the Virgin Mary. And historically, how has the Virgin Mary been used both as a model for women, but there's some people like Mary Gordon who, you know, objected to her being kind of used against, you know, driven young women, as sort of say, well, you should be more like Mary, you know.
Well, I mean, the interesting thing about the Virgin Mary is, you know, she's the perfect human being, and physically she's combined, you know, two features that, you know, no one person can. You know, she's both a virgin and a mother. That does not normally, that's not normally the way things work. So, and by holding her up to a pedestal, some feminists say, well, you're holding women to an impossible ideal, and you're kind of channeling them into, you know, two distinct roles that really doesn't match the lives of, you know, most women today anywhere. You know, being a mother, I've said, you know, I think, you know, for most women around the world, you know, who are not, you know, financially privileged and secure, you know, it's an extraordinarily difficult situation, you know. And you know, the sort of strength and power that comes, you know, from virginity is something that, you know, you see, you know, in some of these tremendous, you know, sisters who started the convents and the hospitals and the schools in the United States, and, you know, Mother Mary MacKillop in Australia. So I think that part of the, you know, part of looking at this can't be just looking at the 14-year-old Mary who said, you know, fiat, but, you know, looking at the range of ways that this, you know, her radical commitment has been lived out through the lives of distinct people. We're not supposed to be Mary. There's only one Mary. We're supposed to embody her traits in our own, you know, unique lives.
So in your piece, you lay out kind of the church's, you know, support for women in many ways, but also kind of the secular cultural critique. Where does that put the Catholic woman who is also a feminist? I mean, there is that tension, as you suggest, but is there any movement to bring those sides any closer together?
Well, I think there are. I mean, there's a group of women, you know, some of them are writing under the category, they're trying to be new feminists. You know, these, you know, John Paul II feminists. And I think there's many things that are interesting there. Frankly, one of the phrases, I think, that hasn't helped that movement very much is the phrase feminine genius. At least in the American context, I don't think that's a good way to go, because it seems almost, you know, kind of reductionistic. You know, it seems almost a little kind of late Victorian romantic. You know, it leads, you know, to the sense that everything is just, you know, done differently if it's done by a woman. And, you know, if you're studying for an exam, you know, if you're sweeping the floor even, you know, that doesn't exactly, you know, track into most people's lives. So I think that, you know, there's a start with some of the new feminism. My worry about the new feminism is that it doesn't seem to be engaging, you know, more broadly some of the already established Catholic feminists. I mean, it's like they're starting all over again. And, you know, I would prefer to see a bigger conversation, so that they don't just, you know, start with Edith Stein and move forward, but really, you know, kind of engage people like, you know, Beth Johnson and Lisa Cahill and Margaret Farley, and, you know, sort of situate themselves within the broader conversation of people who love the church and, you know, love Jesus and honor Mary as much as they do, even if the phrasing is somewhat different.
Okay. So you've mentioned some of the people of previous generation. Now, who are some of these new feminists writing these days?
There's some woman named Erica Bianchi, who is, you know, a younger woman, B-I-A-N-C-H-I, who's written a couple of books on this, you know, new feminism. And, you know, a lot of the new feminism seems to be concerned with, you know, opposition to contraception and abortion, you know, where, you know, I mean, obviously you're getting into very complicated, you know, sort of sets of issues. And it strikes me that those issues are somewhat separable in terms of just looking at them.
Abortion and contraception.
Well, I mean, it seems to me to define the new feminism in terms of contraception, opposition to contraception and abortion is, you know, almost just a mirror image of, you know, an older feminism that defined it itself in terms of access to and use of these, you know. I don't think we're going to make a whole lot of progress if we just focus on the, you know, the culture war issues.
Now, you're at Notre Dame, and obviously you've got, you know, you teach students there. What is your sense among the young women there? What is their, is it pretty varied in terms of the kind of feminism that they're embracing?
Yeah, I mean, I think most people, you know, don't really use the word or not use the word. You know, I mean, it's sort of, it's become such a loaded word, either the new feminism or the old feminism. So, you know, what people want is to build rich, fulfilling lives. And, you know, in their professional life, you know, in their personal lives, they want to have the flexibility to, you know, to work or for a time to stay home with their kids. You know, I think it's much more about structuring a life than it is about, you know, using a label.
And I know there was controversy on the campus about the whole vagina monologues a couple of years ago, so that kind of became a flashpoint for questions of feminism, et cetera.
Right. And, you know, I mean, my own view on that, which, you know, has been published, is we can engage things like that. We don't have to view them as something that the tradition can't handle. They don't need to be, you know, rejected as hostile, you know, incursions. They can be interpreted. They can be understood. They can be explained. And the tradition has the resources with which to do that. You know, it's not something, you know, I mean, I'm less worried about Notre Dame students imitating the women in the vagina monologues than I am worried about them imitating, you know, some of the characters you see on, you know, popular sitcoms and dramas, you know, Grey's Anatomy.
Now, this paper, article you have in America came from a talk that you delivered here in New York on this conference on contending modernities. Maybe you can speak a little bit about what that was about and what the conversation that ensued from your talk and from some of the other talks?
Well, it was actually a wonderful event. Under the direction of Scott Appleby, Notre Dame is committing to kind of helping to organize this multi-year project called Contending Modernities, Islam, Catholicism, and, you know, kind of secular. And what it's about is trying to kind of analyze and nuance and bridge different ways of approaching modernity. And I guess it's called modernities because we want to honor the fact that, you know, there is no one construction of modernity that, you know, at least, you know, we're not going to presuppose there is one. And one of the sets of talks that we had at that was a set of talks on kind of the relationship or the role of women. And so we had, you know, speakers, you know, a couple of speakers from the Catholic tradition and a couple of speakers from the Muslim tradition address how these two traditions were engaging with modern issues. How do you reconcile the traditional women's role in these religious traditions with the more expansive vision given to the role of women in the contemporary era?
Well, the text for that is available online.
It is. Yeah, there's a website.
Well, we'll put the link up with our conversation so people can check it out. Well, Kathy Cavaney from Notre Dame University, we want to thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Tim. It's always great to talk with you, and good luck to you all at America.
I want to thank you again for joining us for this week's podcast. And it's a reminder to go online where we have links to that discussion that took place here in New York. As part of the Contending Modernity series sponsored by Notre Dame. Also this week, we have a roundup of the Oscar films. That's coming up next week, so we have a roundup of some of our reviews, as well as an archive piece on urban living. This is Tim Reedy for America Magazine.